Hello everyone, it's time for the Mac Show. After a slight delay, we're here and ready to talk about... Now, what should we talk about, folks? What do you think? What should we...
Dyson.
Anything?
Do we have any news this week?
Not sure. Let me just check the interweb. Oh! Apparently something came out. So anyway, my name's Carl Madden. I'm joined by a wonderful panel. First up, we have Mr. Alex Fox. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm fantastically, wonderfully well.
And you come last in the pundit quiz.
That's my position, and I'm sticking by it.
Also, you know, joined...
I didn't come last. They got it wrong.
Uh-huh. Right, yes. Also join us, after not being here for ages, we have the wonderful Don McAllister.
Yeah. And I'm afraid to say I'm only going to be here for a very, 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 very short time as well. It's just been crazy the past couple of weeks, and Friday afternoons of techno hammering, so I'm going to try and hang around for at least another 10 or 15 minutes.
Excellent.
But, yeah, I do apologise for my being bereft of attendance for the past couple of weeks. But, yeah, I'm here now.
The lesser spotted Don. Back today. And rounding out our little group, we have Kelly Monte. Where the hell's that come from?
I'm Kelly Gamont. Just woke up, not
Kelly
you.
Gamont, sorry about that.
It's okay, people have actually pronounced it way wronger than that. So.
Oh. Kelly Monteith was a Canadian comedian from the 80s, as far as I can recall. God knows why that sprung to mind. Oh, dear. So, yes, the new iPhones. What do we reckon? Now, I know, because Don's got to shoot off pretty early, let's go straight to Don and find out what he thinks. So, firstly, the 5C, beautiful, unapologetically plastic phone.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there were no big surprises, were there? I mean, to be honest, I think that the major surprise was really the price of the 5C. I wrote a blog post a couple of days ago that it probably is a marketing ploy, a stroke of marketing genius, in that instead of having the old phone being last year's phone and sort of still paying the same price to manufacture it and reducing the margins and selling it, and, you know, do people really want last year's phone? They're basically taking last year's phone, wrapped it in a nice new shiny plastic case, and it's the new phone. And, you know, so they probably will attract more people who want an iPhone, perhaps don't want to pay top dollar for the 5S. But, I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes. I know there's lots of discussions, because it went on pre-orders today, that, you know, it hasn't sold out yet.
No.
But, I'm not really surprised. It was said in the pre-show, I think it's the phone. The people that normally would, you know, make a phone sell out during the pre-order phase are, you know, enthusiasts and diehard people who really want it. And they're probably going to hang out for the 5S. So no real surprises there.
But, they're still waiting in line.
You said it was cheaper, but it's only about 100 quid cheaper, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not
if
that
you buy
much
outright,
cheaper, is it? Yeah, it's not. I mean,
if you're a kid, that's a dramatic difference. I mean, if you're a younger person who wouldn't necessarily buy one otherwise, that $100 could be the whole difference.
It does miss out on a lot, though, doesn't it? I mean, there's the fingerprint reader, the, you know, 64-bit processor, the vastly improved camera. I don't know. If it was me, I'd try and hang out. I try and find that extra $100 from somewhere, but as you say, some people just can't. So, you know, we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's also a different thing, isn't it? It's a fashion item now.
Yeah.
You know, so you're talking about the hundred pounds and the younger child. It's also the zany, colourful, build your own image phone, which it never was before. And Kelly, of course, she's a zany young person. But so there is a marked difference in that respect as well. It's not just it's not just choice of two expensive iPhones now. It's your build your own Lego brick iPhone, isn't it? It's a bit different.
By the time you had the case.
But do you think the plastic build cheapens the Apple brand? Because that's been said quite a lot.
Apple made a plastic phone until a year ago.
Yeah. I don't think so, because from what I've heard, I listened to Andy Yanatko, who was actually at the demo thing, and although it's plastic, and it came across in the video as well, it is actually a metal shell, so that it's not sort of like a cheap plastic, flimsy, you know, press it and your finger dents the plastic. It's actually a metal shell that's been encased in plastic and then covered with a protective covering. So from the sounds of it, it sounds more like, I think Andy said, it feels like enamel. So it doesn't feel plastic. It feels very solid, very dense. The same with all these new phones, you know, until you actually see it and until you actually pick it up and have a, you know, hold it in your hand, you can't really get a good idea of how it's going to feel. But from the sounds of it, it sounds like it's still, you know, it still feels like a premium product, even though one of the materials is actually plastic.
Mm. I don't think that they're using plastic as a negative. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but in the vast amount of all of this keynote, I'm very positive about everything they've done, which is really unlike me. And
wow.
But I think they're going with the plastic, not, oh, we've just made it cheaper. They've said that we've got a premium product and we're doing everything we can to make it available to as many people as we can. And we're saying we have made it plastic. Yes, we've managed to knock $100 off for you. I mean, it's not for the kids, it's not for anyone other than the Chinese market, we know that. But they've been seen to say, okay, we're changing our principles a bit to accommodate your needs. And I think tactically, and if you, even like morally, I think they've gone the right direction. They cannot, the market will not allow them to be the top premium phone manufacturer forever. Especially in the parts of the world where they need to get into now. They've sewn up the Western world. They really need to start selling up the rest, the Middle East. And if you look at that, they are such a small player in the Middle East. Android aren't just like a little bit ahead of them. Android have wiped the floor with them. And they are, to me, the plastic is actually offering something that they're saying, we have done this specifically for you people. And it's, to me, I think it's a brilliant, brilliant move. You've still got your Western world expensive top of the range phone, but you've got something and you've actually actively said we've done something for you rather than us dictating. You're the market and we are trying to accommodate you as a new market, and I think it's really, really clever.
When you say the Middle East, you mean China, you mean the Far East?
Far East, Middle East, China. Yeah, okay. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, Apple never said they were going to make a cheap phone. It was only the stock market and things demanding that they make a cheap phone.
They must, or they're doomed. They're doomed.
No, but the point is, it's not cheap. That's my point.
No, absolutely.
What they've done something to say, we have done everything we can to still give you quality, but make it as affordable as we can and still give you a classy piece of kit. That's what I'm saying. That's what they've done, and I sort of approve because they've kept both.
Mm-hmm. Something Jeff Gamet said to me yesterday as well, I think it was off air, unfortunately, but he said what Apple tend to do is they tend to take the high market first and then they slowly move down. So the next tier is like the middle tier now. So they put a middle tier phone out there price-wise anyway. Mm-hmm. And once that market takes off and develops, then they, just like I did on the iPod, they then come down to an even lower market and then they try and push the competition down further and further down so they got less and less space to manoeuvre. But just sticking on the 5C for a moment, what about that cover? Because although the phone looks, I can get away with the phone looking quite stylish and it's all mold plastic and it looks kind of sexy. That cover, no. When I saw those holes in that cover, it didn't do anything for me.
Can I just point out the only flaw that I, most obvious flaw that I see in the 5C and in their color options is that their blue is not Don McAllister's eyes blue.
Oh.
You're in there, mate.
The only thing, I mean, again, it's one of these things, I really want to see it first in the flesh before I pass judgment on it, but the thing that really shocked me, and this is a very minor thing, but it's very strange for Apple, if you actually look at the back of the phone where the holes are, they haven't left a space to see iPhone. You actually see HON, and even part of that's obliterated. It's very strange.
That's not the Chinese for something, and they've been amazingly clever.
Could well be. Yeah, but I don't know. I want to see it in the flesh first before I sort of pass judgment on it, I think. But you never know. Might be interesting.
One of the things I've always said, Apple, give us a choice. And they've finally done it.
You've got one now. And you can still take advantage of that choice because, as Don said, they're all still available on the website.
Did you guys think it was interesting that, like I did, that they've gotten back into cases? Because remember, they only made the bumper for the 4 out of necessity. They didn't make any they didn't make them on purpose. Like they made them because they had to. It wasn't like, oh, and we offer you this case. And so with the 5, Apple didn't make a case. And so it sort of seems like I'm trying to remember who I was speaking with about this, how they're sort of doubling down on this form factor and how everybody yelling about how Apple needed to make a bigger phone kind of is being silenced, because not only did they make cases, but the thing that I thought was the most notable that they sort of released but didn't say anything about during the announcement was that they also are back in the dock market.
The cases thing's interesting, because it's one thing that I noticed every time I went to the Apple store. The number of iPhone 5 cases were very few and far between, even third-party, you know, obviously they didn't do their own, but even third-party ones, they never really seemed to stock very many iPhone 5 cases in the Apple store.
I don't remember hearing about lots of them either. There weren't a lot of people saying, oh, we've updated our case, so now it fits the 5. It was like, if you had a 5, pretty much it was naked, or maybe you put like a jelly skin or something on it, and it was there weren't a whole lot of cases.
But that was design-led. That was the whole point of the iPhone 5. From, say, the 4 up, it's a beautiful piece of kit. It's got a gorgeous glass back. Everything about it, I was saying to Don before we started, everything about it was having this gorgeous naked phone. The only trouble is, to keep it in any sort of state, you need to cover it in something.
But I'm a dropper kicker thrower. I need to put something on it because I'm going to drop it. And I now have a ceramic tile floor, so I have to put it in something.
Just want to break in there. Just joining us now, because the Johnny come lately, is Mr. Andy Lee from Elmug. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm great, mate. Yeah, I had a bit of traffic on the road to Bristol, but I'm here now and almost out.
Well, I don't
want sound all right? Can you hear me okay?
You sound fine. You sound fine. Now, I don't want you to take this personally, but Don's about to go just as you get here.
Oh, mate, well done.
Handing the baton across to Andy. And in fact, we're next on the screen, so I'll hand it across to Andy. So there you go.
Cheers, mate.
Don, just before you quickly scoot off, just what are your quick thoughts on the 5S as we move on to that?
I was very impressed. I think they've done some incredible stuff inside the 5S. And it seems very much as it's now a sort of test bed as well, you know, for things for the future. I think we'll see lots of things happening now they've got that fingerprint reader, the thumbprint reader. I think that's the start of something really, really huge. Not just for, you know, unlocking your phone for making purchases in the Apple store, but eventually for other things in the future. That motion control sensor obviously is something to do with the future wearable computing devices. They're going to get lots of metrics back from those. I'm sure we'll see that in future products. And the camera looks stunning. You know, and I think they've been very sensible not to go down the path of upgrading the megapixels and spent a lot of effort on, you know, updating the software. And I was reading an article or a tweet or listening to someone, and they said, you know, it really does, you know, point-and-shoot cameras, they can't catch up at this point, because there's no way that a point-and-shoot camera can be developed that's got a 64-bit processor built in, and, you know, and the speed and the software. So I think the camera's really impressive, and can't wait to try that out and see what the pictures are like. But that's probably a good point to go now, because I know Alex has probably got some views on photography and,
oh, yes,
and stuff, so I can say that and then duck out. And
well, thanks for joining us, Don. Hopefully you'll come back next week when things should be back to normal, I think.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully things will be back to normal for me as well, so good, yeah. I'll try my best.
Okay, thanks, Don. Hopefully, you know how to hang up on a hangout.
No problem.
See you. Cheers, Don.
Bye. And as Don goes off into the ether there. So, we're left with the 5S. Now, although I wasn't that impressed with the 5C, the 5S I thought looked absolutely gorgeous. And the gold one wasn't as glitzy or as outlandish as I thought. And, you know, there's lots of bling bling comments going on and stuff like that. But I just think it looks absolutely wonderful.
I think, like a lot of things, when Apple comes out with something that's a new color and we see it, a lot of people diss it outright based on a grainy video feed or a description or a quick photo that was snapped during the announcement, and in person it never looks quite as awful as what it appears to on a screen.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, when the iPad was originally launched, people were just looking at pictures saying, oh my god, that looks like a big iPhone. And it wasn't until they got their hands on it in the store, mm-hmm, that people could see and feel like the tactile response of the glass and how it, mm-hmm, felt in your hand. It was totally different to how we'd been perceived, how it'd been
the IMAX. When all the iMacs went full color, the gumdrop iMac, when that went to a bunch of different colors besides the Bondi, people had issues there. And, like, just all the way along, anytime Apple comes out with something that's any sort of color that we haven't seen before, people will automatically diss it. So I think, like you call it, I think the gold looked nice. I still don't know that it's for me, but it certainly looked a lot less like a phone that Flava Flav would want than I had originally presumed.
Andy, what do you reckon? What are your views?
All the pictures I've seen of it look fairly tasteful and muted. The video that they showed looked very, very gold. So as long as it's not as gold as that, it won't be horrible looking. I won't be buying one of those ones, though.
Are you going for a plastic one? Cause you...
no, I'm not going to go for a plastic one either. I'm on the fence about a 5S. I don't know if I want it or need it. I don't think there's that much in it, apart from the 64-bit processor, that I actually would need, and that's only to develop and test against.
Mm. Alex, what's your opinions on the 5S?
Well, first of all, I thought Bling Bling was one of those new high-quality ringtones. But you're right, the gold. They've managed to tone down something that could have been unbelievably horrific, let's face it. I mean, the idea of a gold phone, you know, goes with various teeth and other things. But, yeah, I think they did that quite well. In general, I mean, the outside of the phone is, you know, it's what the outside of the phone has looked like for the last year. But, I mean, what they've done on the inside of this phone is, I don't know, is it impressive? Yes, of course it's impressive. Someone's come up with something new, and it's always great when somebody pushes the boundaries that little bit further. But from, you know, if you had an iPhone 5S and an iPhone 5, I don't think they're carrying... Okay, the only thing they've got in common are two wired, aren't they? Because they're doing away with the black as well, aren't they? So if you had two of those in your hand, other than the sort of little gold ring around the home button, you wouldn't really be able to tell the difference. So on the outside, it probably... I mean, look, the iPhone 5 is quite attractive. I actually don't think it's as attractive as the 4 shape. It's sort of the, you know, it's the pleasing ratios to the eye. I think the iPhone 5 is too long for the width and, you know, pleasing to the eye, but that's just an aesthetic. You know, I just like the look of the iPhone 4. I think it's a better shape.
There's rumours, of course, that next year they'll change the form factor again, probably, because it'll be the top, like, TikTok swing. And they think the screen's going to have to get bigger. That's what all the rumour sites are already saying. For crying out loud, it's still a year. We haven't even had this one yet.
They started saying that after the 5.
Oh, so we have it for 2 years.
We've been hearing it forever already about how the next one must be bigger. And if you ask anybody who is absolutely convinced of this, really the best reason they can come up with is Samsung. And if that's your motivation for why Apple needs to do something, then please be quiet. Grown-ups are talking.
Now, it's in my imagination, but is these versions, the 16, 32, and 64 gigabit, are they slightly dearer than normal? They're like, on UK prices, they look about £50 dearer than normal. Is that my imagination?
Probably. That or the drugs.
Drugs.
I think it's because you got that nice little silvery round or goldy round bit around your home button.
Well, let's talk about the fingerprint scanner, shall we? Who's impressed by the fingerprint scanner? Is this something we should be embracing and looking forward to? I mean, I can see definite benefits of this. And a lot of people are saying, this is just a gimmick. This is just a differentiator to differentiate it from the plasticky thing. Now, I don't buy that. I think, see, for me personally, this has been my personal use case scenario. At the moment, because I want to buy apps on a fairly daily basis, I have my Apple ID. And my Apple ID, or even though it's haystacked, my password, it's got, you know, it's got some little hidden things in there, it's still not that complicated a password. Because I have to manually type it in every time I want to buy something. If I've got something that I can just hold my thumb to, I can now change my password to something like 32 characters long or whatever it is, and it won't matter anymore. No, and I'll be much... True.
Just
why is that?
For when your button's not working anymore, or you want to buy it on anything other than your iPhone, you might regret.
No, because I got
a new one.
No, because you got things like 1Password and LastPass and things like that.
Oh, if only we knew someone that knew anything about that. No, I think the more important part of the security isn't necessarily the buying stuff security. because of, in general, if you're, someone's going to buy something off of your iTunes account, it's going to go on your phone. It's not the most sensible thing to go and buy someone else's iTunes stuff, because it's only going to turn up on their device. It's not like you can actually steal it.
What I'm saying is my Apple ID password is for everything. I've now got an Apple. So it's got, like, yeah, you can get in there, you can even buy stuff with my Apple ID password.
I mean, maybe to be able to use that as a secondary device to buy it on any other thing. Use that as a passcode reader if you're buying something on your Mac. I don't want to chuck in my password, I just want to put my finger and it somehow links the two things together. That would be useful. Use that as a universal scanner for everything you buy, and that's great. But I think to actually lock down your phone, I think that's a very good idea. I thought you were going to say the perfect case point is I won't be able to send out tweets about you when you're drunk in the pub looking the other direction.
That. Thanks for that the other night. Cheers. Kelly, what are your opinions on this?
I just want to put out there, first of all, that a lot of people seem to think that what the fingerprint scanner is going to do is take the fingerprint, whatever the fingerprint is that is pressed to it, and like send it off somewhere to do something and then come back again, and that's not true. And what it's literally only going to be a yes-no mechanism. It's a completely binary system. So once you set, this is my fingerprint, whatever fingerprint you use, and I did like that it had multiple fingerprints, because you guys probably can't see this, but I have a scar on my index finger that goes across the knuckle.
One day we're going to find out how that got there.
It's really not as interesting a story as you may want to believe. This scar is a much better story than that. But anyway, that one, I was worried that, because whenever I've done fingerprints, you know, and stuff, like, it always shows up really bad and it's scar tissue, so I was worried about that being an issue if they're going to say, you have to use your right index finger. So I'm glad they were flexible about that. But also, if I pick up Carl's phone when Carl's drunk in the pub and I'm trying to tweet on his behalf, when I stick my thumb on the phone, it's not going to call somebody and go, hey, Alex, Kelly has Carl's phone, please go sort this out. Like, that's not what's going to happen.
No.
So it's just going to go, that's here's what I Carl. Know, here's the new one, no. And then you're just going to get dissed, and that's it. It all happens on the phone. If your phone is in airplane mode, it will still be able to stick your thumb on and have it work. And there are a lot of people who have taken this to what I can only diplomatically refer to as a hysterical conclusion. And It's really not the terrifying thing that some folks have tried to turn this into. And for anybody interested, I'll put a link in the show notes. There's a really good article about, based on what we know right now, there's a really good article on Tidbits from one of their security guys about what does it do, how does it work, why is this a good idea, and it's really nice. And the other thing to think about is that, like a lot of stuff, when Apple first debuts it, you can turn it off. You don't have to use the fingerprint sensor. And if you're going to buy this phone and complain about the fact that you have to use it, I'm going to beat you with your phone because you don't have to. It's another of those things that you can turn off, just like goofball ringtones and the parallax in iOS 7 and any of the motion sensor stuff. You know, if you're really that concerned about the NSA or anybody else finding out where you are and how fast you got there, you don't have to use any of that stuff if you don't want to.
When you mention the NSA, that's the problem, isn't it? The NSA stories have just muddied the water, and now everyone thinks that whatever you put into a device is now getting scanned and sent off somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And let's be brutally honest, if the NSA wants my thumbprint, they have it.
Well, they just cut your thumb off. To carry on my positivity again...
I can't believe we're doing this. I can't
what
believe.
What the NSA done with him? Where's the real Alex?
Exactly.
Yeah,
where is he? I'm like the Simpsons character. Should I start talking in a German accent? Phil Schiller made the point. Now, I'm sure it was the keynote, which I've got to admit, I didn't watch in the pub. Too busy chatting up Andy's girlfriend, actually. I tried to watch the next day, but fell asleep. And then I managed to watch it yesterday evening. So I've actually tried three times now. But Phil Schiller actually took the time to mention that this was linked to a separate part of the A7 chip, which it doesn't talk to any other part of the machine. So it's I can't, I mean, he didn't say non-hackable because everything's hackable because you don't know there's a vulnerability. So at the moment, their belief is, as it doesn't ever leave the phone. So it's a light switch, if you like. That's all it is. It then allows another part of the phone, it gives another part of the phone a yes to then carry on to do whatever it's supposed to do. So in theory, nobody, it is unhackable. It's not stored anywhere. It's not even stored anywhere other than this individual chip in the phone. Look, I can't say it's not hackable. I would dare say in a 6 months' time, some genius somewhere will find a way of hacking it, and Apple will pay them a lot of money to come and work for them. But right now, they have done everything, and they actually have gone out their way to explain, which is unusual for them. They've actually gone out their way to say what Kelly has said. And the fact that people are trying to look for a reason, it's a bit annoying on the grounds that if they hadn't said anything, then they deserve the criticism, but they actually went out their way to say, look, I know your worries, but this is how we've got away or got around what you're worried about. So I think it's actually quite important to give them a thumbs up on the effort they made to explain this to people that maybe should have aluminium hats on. You know, it's that sort of thing.
That's normally me.
Because remember that when Siri was first released and people had it on, you know, people were using it on their phones, remember a lot of people didn't realize that request was going somewhere else and coming back again. Which is what Siri does. Most of the Siri processing isn't happening on the phone. Like, the actual mechanics of the request, Siri's trying to figure out what you want locally and then bounces that request out to presumably the data center in North Carolina that I still contend is where they've uploaded Steve's consciousness. And then it comes back to the phone with whatever your answer is. So when you ask Siri who lives in a pineapple under the sea, she figures out what that is and then goes to North Carolina and comes back and tells me that it's SpongeBob SquarePants.
All that technology to find that out.
I learned something.
Some people don't know. So anyway, my point is, like, it was not very clear the mechanics of Siri when they were initially talking about it and what it did and how it worked. And so, I think it's a big change that they've come out and said, like, this is what it does. These are the things that we thought about before it ever got released to anybody. It's why it uses a different part of the chip, so that even if it is ultimately hacked, it's not done through any sort of other method that people would normally use to get into something inside the phone and crawl around and have a look. It's just not going to happen that way.
But okay. Also, if you like, I mean, I don't know how many people have user accounts on an iPhone, but it does offer the opportunity of user accounts on a phone. Because you can pick it up and then you could have a universal phone in the house, for instance, and you could have, with your contact list, you could all have your own contact list, all done by the cloud, and then when you put your thumb on it, it knows who's using the phone. Or you could have separate... Another thing that really annoys me on the phone is if I'm playing a game and the kids want to use it, they're far better than me, and when I come back, they've already done three-quarters of the game, and I have to normally delete the damn thing to start it again so I can go back to moron level, right? If you had a thumb or something like that, and they allowed the usability of that, we could all have our own accounts on games and things like that. I think... For that reason, it's a lot more to it than what they're suggesting at the moment. There's a lot more usability. But they've also said they're not going to allow that out to any third-party application.
Accounts was the first thing I thought of when I saw it. Mm.
But if it's just... if they do develop an API and it's just a simple, yes, this is who that person is, no, it's not, then I don't see why they couldn't release that to developers. Andy, can you see any... benefits for you as a developer that you could, if they opened up the fingerprint printer to you?
Well, definitely. If you're allowed to authenticate your user that way, that would be, you know, you'd be the same as everybody else on the device. So, you know, having universal accounts and universal logins, people using Twitter for logins and people using Facebook for logins and never having an account, they'll get used to using that and having that one thing rather than having to log into my app or some service of mine. Definitely is more useful for the user. I do see one problem with the fingerprint reader is when you get a new device. Because the fingerprint hash is located on the phone, it's not going to be on your new phone. So you're not going to be able to use that. And if you're never using your account password, that might catch people out the first time that ever happens.
But wouldn't you just when you got your new device, you've put in your normal user account.
Yeah, you're putting in your. But the thing is, you won't have used it for a year or 2 years, possibly. I don't know
You might have forgotten your password.
You might have forgotten your password. I mean, at the moment, you use it every time you buy something, or almost, depends on, you know, every time you buy something after the timeout goes away. Mm-hmm. You use it on a fairly frequent basis. You remember it, and I mean, there's this sort of authentication, retrieving your password stuff. So if you've gone like hyper secure and you've got, you know, you've just talked about having a very secure password because you don't have to type it. If you do go that route and have a secure password that you don't need to remember, then you've got to write it down, you've got to record it somewhere. Yeah, you're going to put it in something like 1Password, LastPass, or anything like that. But you're going to have this thing that you have forgotten because you can't just put your fingerprint on the new iPhone and go, oh, hello, Andy, and download all your stuff.
Perhaps I will keep my password as password in. Damn.
It makes it a lot easier for me to hack your phone, yeah.
Another thing, of course, we've now got a 64-bit chip in this new phone. Now, Andy, again, as a developer, what are the possible advantages of this, then?
Advantages? The way it works, it should, in theory, result in things being faster across all apps. But that does depend. There are some things people need to do with their apps to make them work properly. If you've had some lazy practices developing your app, you can get caught out by some things, and the system actually runs quicker when everybody's 64-bit, not just some apps. If it's a mixture of 32-bit and 64-bit apps, it runs a bit slower than it does if everything's 64-bit. And it does use more memory, 64-bit app, because you're storing those extra 32 bits for absolutely everything that needs it or didn't need it before. You're taking up more memory.
Yeah, but it's also, if you're taking, you can up the memory, but then you're not having to go onto the flash drive to pull it back. So you're not actually writing and unwriting.
More memory for the same thing. So if I'm storing a number, to store that number, I need to make it will be a 64-bit representation of that number, sure, whether I needed the extra 32 bits or not.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you go, well, I mean, my understanding of 64 architecture is, first of all, you can use a larger part of the memory anyway. So if you've got 64 gigabyte of memory, not memory, RAM, say you've got, what's the, it got now, because they don't tell you, it's probably got about 2, maybe, 1.5 gigabyte. I don't know if they tell you.
I don't think they've told us yet. Until I fix it, or whoever does the teardowns get hold of it. Yeah.
But normally, you don't use all of that, because a 32-bit memory, when you're writing 32-bit, it's very, very iffy, if you like. That is a really technical term, to use all the RAM. You have to leave some spare. It's just like, it's a bit like with hard drives. You need to leave some space, because yes, they will work, but they need to be able to swap, and they need a bit more room, if you like. 64-bit means you can use more of it, but it also allows you a lot more. With 64-bit architecture, they're sort of limited. Well, they've got that 4 gig maximum anyway on RAM on 32-bit. But even if you've got 4 gig, you can't really use 4 gig. It's just not stable enough. But if you go to 64-bit and even still use 4 gig, it's still a lot more stable in 64-bit than it was in 32-bit. And if that's wrong, that article I spent 2 hours trying to understand this morning lied to me.
So what can we... I wonder how long it will be to developers start to take advantage of purely the 64-bit architecture, because obviously they're going to have to wait until the phones sell in enough quantity to make it worthwhile, because if they put out a 64-bit, obviously the 32-bit phones won't be able to handle that.
They're doing the same thing they did along the way since they upgraded to Intel processors in the desktop Macs. They'll be dual binaries, basically, in the beginning. The way you go about upgrading your app, it builds a binary that has both the 32-bit and the 64-bit. And the 64, obviously, you can only run it on the 64-bit device if it's 64-bit, other way around. So you have to have the 32-bit available, and the 32-bit can run on the 64-bit device if someone hasn't done that, but it's going to run slower. And if you've got a situation where, say you've got more than one device, so you've got the A7 processor in one device and you've got an A6 in another, and you're sharing data between those, then you've got issues passing that data backwards and forwards. So people need to do it. There is quite a bit of work they need to do on their apps.
Yeah, they were basically, they were saying that the simplest way for this to do is when you download an app, you get the option of the 64 or 32-bit version of the same app. Because they've written the Xcode compiler in a certain way now that it, as you go through something you've previously written, it will flag up things that need to be changed for 64.
It's it will do, but you, there's a lot of manual work you'll need to do.
Yes, exactly.
Basically, when you upgrade the project...
It will show you the code that needs doing. That's the point. That's what they claim.
So,
ish.
So can I ask a layman's question then? Because you're getting far too technical for me now at this point. So what can we expect? Are we expecting much faster apps which can just throw graphics around the screen?
Yes.
Or... And so that's it.
Where the speed improvements came from in a large part that they talked about in the keynote is that the 64-bit capabilities massively, massively increased some of the stuff. If your app needs, takes advantage of that kind of math, then it's going to make it much quicker. Even an app that doesn't need it, the math capability is still going to see a speed improvement, and even more so if everything you're using at the current time is 64-bit. Because they can share a lot of stuff. If the apps aren't all 64-bit on the device, then the bits of code they share has, you know, they need the bit of code for this app and a bit of code for that app. If that tiny bit of code is for all the apps, then they can share that, and then they can all be quicker.
Okay, so we're going to see some blindingly fantastic apps later in the year. Once, as long as the pickup of this phone is like, take as it normally goes, it'll be worth developing in this new architecture.
It'll definitely be worth people doing it, and you kind of need to because you need to make sure things work.
Yeah,
and so
what
the more distributed your app is, the more it uses iCloud or any kind of cloud service, and people having multiple phones. I mean, if you go out and buy a brand new iPhone 5S and you still keep your old iPad and you're playing whatever it is, you're storing whatever it is, that data needs to be managed. So people have to go back and do the work to actually fix that.
Okay.
I think like a lot of things, now that it's a screaming graphic, it's going to be games first, and then it's going to trickle down to other things. So like that's why the demo for like, oh hi, 64-bit was Infinity Blade.
Of course.
But,
and
know,
we're going to get...
Sorry, I was going to say, what you've got to realise is so many of the games that have been more or less ported over to iOS, there's a lot more to them graphically than you get now, but what they have to do is they keep having to turn polygon off after polygon off and etc. to get it to a point where it will run. You're going to get games that you've already got, which they're just going to go back into the, back onto the desktop and just start turning things back on, which are already there. It's just you don't have access to them because it won't run on your old phone. So you will get... You know, like, I think they did it with iTunes Match, whereas if you had a certain bit rate on a certain tune, you could download the higher bit rate automatically. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to find that with games. So if you've got Infinity Blade's a good example, old Infinity Blade, once you get one of these new phones, they might offer you the ability to just download the higher rated version.
The HD version.
Yeah, because it's already been made. It's made in that full resolution, if you like, full gameplay. But they have to just keep turning bits off.
So we
just turn them all on and everyone will be happy.
So we take the 64-bit and we take the new A7 chip, and then we go move over to something they didn't really talk about at all at the keynote, as far as I'm aware. And that was those reports a few months ago about controllers coming that you can sync up with your phone over Bluetooth. And then we get into AirPlay and we start to maybe see where their gaming console rivalry things start to come in. Because these chips, this A7 chip is very powerful. They're looking, what's it like?
It's the new Mac Pro, you guys.
There you go.
Well, it's twice the speed of the iPhone 5. And, you know,
exactly.
That wasn't a slouch.
No, it wasn't.
New.
So we could be looking, maybe they're holding that information back until they release the new iPads later in the year.
Well,
but
I personally think they've made a mistake that they haven't, seemingly, they haven't upgraded the Wi-Fi capability in this. And I think if
AC?
You're starting to go with really fast...
Yeah, no AC, yeah.
Yeah, if you're starting to go over to really, really fast processing and you want to start sending things over, you're getting to the point now where maybe it could be a multi-function. I mean, also remember with 64 bits, you can actually start to do proper simultaneous apps rather than having to pause everything. So
true.
You might be able to be streaming something off of your phone, the movie you're watching, but then still be looking at your Mail or surfing the web or use it as a second screen, but it's actually the first and second screen and using iPlay, because it now has the power to do that.
Well, something this new chip and the 64-bit will obviously be taking advantage of is the new camera that's coming into this new iPhone, and especially some of the video options they've got in there, especially the slow-mo option. Now, as our resident photographer, Alex, what do you make of this? Is this a camera we should be getting excited about?
I think, not to contradict anyone else that may be on the network, it's not here today, I actually think, no, the best thing they have done is they've basically they've made it slightly bigger. They've made the sensor bigger. They've gone from 1.4 to 1.5 micron, which doesn't sound enough, a lot. But that they said 15%. I think it's 14.5% more light. But, you know, I'll give them 0.5%. What's that between friends? That's the best improvement they've made by a long stretch. And that's something they should have done years ago. They've been playing a game with a camera for far too long, making claims that basically they weren't really right. And then you've got other manufacturers that come out and actually made some really, really decent cameras. Some of these Nokia camera phones are brilliant. They are basically a camera with a phone attached to them, but, you know, that is a better camera. That's just a fact. And what they've done now with the processing power will improve. I'm not saying it's idiot-proof, but they've gone along the same lines. I think it was, I don't know if it was Panasonic Olympus. One of them made an almost idiot-proof camera. You know, you press the button, they're already taking a picture before you even press the button. It's really, really clever. Chris Forsman, I mean, I'll quote Ewan because he was completely right. We have been saying for 3-4 years on the photo show, stop giving us more pixels, give us bigger pixels. We want the low light sorted out. We don't need to print a billboard. We don't need that. We want the indoor shot, the nightclub shot, the handbag shot, whatever it happens to be. We want that to actually come out and not look like a load of crap.
So let me ask you this, though, Alex. I've talked to other people who have said that the camera itself, the actual bit of hardware in the back of your phone, that is actually decent. It's just that you don't get to do anything with it in the app. Well, so a lot of people have said that what they want is the camera out of the iPhone, but the camera app out of an Android device, because you get white balance and exposure, and there's other stuff that you get to adjust. And like on the iPhone, you get take a picture, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things they still haven't, and I'm not sure why they've done this. It's all to do with, you know, they sort of know what you'll get out of the camera best if you let the camera. And to be honest, for 99% of people that are ever going to use an iPhone camera, the fact that you can't mess around with the aperture or use a RAW file or any of that thing is brilliant. Because, I mean, it's bad enough what Instagram does it. If you can't even put something decent into Instagram before you mess it up, you're in real trouble. I mean, they've improved it. But Chris Forsman, erstwhile commentator on this very network, he has pointed out that one of the things Apple are doing with all this extra processing power is they're getting rid of so much noise that you're losing sharpness. So somewhere in they need to get a balance somewhere in the middle. They have improved the camera, they have improved the software, but possibly they're overdoing the software a bit. You know, they're making it a little bit too squeaky clean by taking out all the artifacts, and I don't know, 20% of those artifacts are what most people call sharpness. So they're getting there. The trickery is quite clever. They've finally got the sensor right. Finally. I still think it could be bigger. I think there's a lot of things they don't need to be messing around with. And they know why they're not giving us the raw data. I don't know why they're not giving us the raw data. They know why they're not giving us the raw data. But they are right, as in 99% of people really don't want the raw data, because they'll only mess up their pictures if they had it.
So, Alex, what's the importance of the that new aperture, f2/2?
Well, 2.2 just means...
2.2, sorry.
You let it... It's a bigger hole. It lets in more light. I can't remember what it was before, but... 2.4. It's half the stop. So it lets in... If you're in a darker room, it's a bigger hole, so it's letting in just that bit more light. So your benefit for indoor photography. The thing they've done with the flash is actually quite clever as well.
I was about to ask you about the flash.
Because in the old days, if you're in an environment where you've got your lights on above and you've got a window to the right and you've got, I don't know, a table lamp is a different colour to a fluorescent tube. So you've got all these colours going on. And what you want to do is you want to try and balance the light. With a single flash colour, you've just got to burn everything out to such an extent that you've got one colour across everything. But then you burn everyone out. With this, what it's doing, it's very clever. It's reading the ambient light, but from everywhere in the image. And it's working out the best average. And with two different colours, if you fire them off, one at 17% and one at 83%, I don't know, then you will create the matching colour for the light that's already there. So therefore, it doesn't have to be as bright, because you're not trying to burn anything out, you're trying to lift it. It's more of a fill-in flash. We've flashed you gels to match the colour in the room. So what it's done, it's balanced the light in the room. You can open it up, or was it 2.2 you said, or 2.4?
Mm-hmm. 2.2. Yeah.
So you get more light in it. It's got all this anti-shake stability. It's got millions of really, really useful, clever little gadgets. So you're not going to burn people out. And because of its reading the white balance constantly as well, you will be able to get a lot closer to natural colours. These tricks have all been played, but most manufacturers have gone one or the other. Mm-hmm. They've gone more megapixels and then they've oversampled. They've done all the tricks they possibly can. Again, being positive, what Apple have done here, they've taken matching tricks. None of them are perfect, but if you get... They've gone, it's like, you know, they've had a box of tricks and they've gone, okay, well, if we balance that lot against that lot works slightly better. It's not perfect, but it is the best you're going to get out of a point and shoot on a phone without going to the Nokia extent, which is more or less a camera with a phone attached to it. So I do approve greatly of what they've done. But they should have listened to us. What's his name? Phil Schiller, reckoning, oh, we've looked at this and everyone else thinks one thing, we think another. Well, if you'd listened to the photo show, they would have done it 3 years ago.
So I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on this camera, I got to say. If the videos and the promotion material lives up to the hype, so to speak, I'll finally be able to take pictures in the pub, which will not be as blurry as they usually are. That'll be the best.
But they're normally blurry.
I don't think the camera's the reason why the pictures in the pub are blurry, Carl.
Oh, right. Slander. Slander, I say.
It's not slander when it's true, sweetie.
Quiet, you. Quiet, you. Okay, so also we've got to look for, I think it's Wednesday or Thursday, isn't it? It's coming out. New iOS 7.
18th, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I wasn't one of the people who got a development thing, the SPU, and went down and loaded it on my iPad and on my phone, and now I'm very jaded to it because it's nothing new. I'm going to get it fully baked and new, and I can play with it, and it'll be like my 5 is a brand new phone on come Wednesday or Thursday. I've forgotten what day it was now.
Yeah. So you've got it for a couple of weeks before you get rid of it for the new one.
I'm already looking for a buyer for my old phone, so... Yes, absolutely. But no, I'm looking for... I mean, they've got so many pieces of kit built into that thing. And I know it was a massive shock when Johnny Ive unveiled it and it was his new vision, but it has really grown on me in those few months since it was initially launched. I mean, when it first appeared on the screen and it just slowly panned across and you saw that star field, I thought, oh my, that looks pretty. And it's hooked me ever since. I wasn't one of the people...
It just looked like someone had left Time Machine money.
Now, who else hasn't actually tried iOS 7 yet? Properly?
He hasn't.
Yeah. No. You've all had it. You all want to play.
No, I haven't played. I don't want to. I want to be like you, Carl.
Why? I want that as a sound clip. I want that as a message thing on my phone. I want to be like you, Carl. I want to walk like you, talk like you, woohoo.
I think it's really clever the way they do launch... it's sort of what Microsoft got so horribly wrong because of, I mean, what they brought out, that Metro, which they don't call it now and everything, I thought it was all right. But
yeah, it's no wrong with it.
When they threw it out, they didn't actually give people time to absorb it. They sort of just threw it out and say, well, look, we might do this, I'm not sure. But what they've done with iOS 7, and I quite like the way they launch it, I looked at it that same night as you did in the pub, and I went, okay, well, let's see how much Android sue iOS for this time. You know, it just looked I was like, oh, no. And I instantly got my back up about it. You know, you were there. You calmed me down. But the more I have seen videos of it, and I've seen people talk about it, like, exactly as you said, it's grown on me. And I think it's really clever the way they do that. They put something out because they know people don't like change. Us old fogies don't really like change.
We don't.
Want it to stay. I mean, if one of my kids moves an icon on my phone, that's it. I'm smashing the phone. I'm getting a new one. How dare you move an icon because I can't find it anymore. And that's how it felt with iOS 7. But the Johnny Ive effect has got to me slowly, insidiously. I'm, you know, oh, okay. Yeah, maybe you were right. Maybe I'm just fighting you because I don't know as well as you. And I like sort of the look of it. And I like the fact that he's given me time to learn that he's finally right and I'm, you know.
Yeah, Kelly, what do you think? Are you looking forward to it, getting the final version?
I have it. So, oh. I think it's nice. The one thing in 7 doesn't exist that I really like that is in 6 is the .com button. Because I actually do type addresses in Safari often, and there's no .com button anymore. Wow. In Safari, and it bums me out. and it's like the smallest little weird thing. Like, it's one of those little things that Apple made better. Like, oh my god, the .com button. And now I don't have it anymore, and I'm really disappointed in that. And I know it's 3 characters and whatever, but I found it so convenient, and I was like, ooh, .com. Like, it was one of those things that was like, this is a touch that proves you live in the future, and now it's gone. Maybe it'll come back, I don't know. But so far, that's been the only thing that I have found unpleasant, I guess. Now that I know my way around, and it's not surprising, because it does look a lot different.
Mm.
Once you sort of get used to how things are now, it's not a bad experience overall. I think a lot of the initial reaction to it was just different, bad. You know, they all went full Alex on it.
Yeah.
But
that phrase, man.
It is.
Well, it is when he says, if you move an icon, I have to smash my phone and get a new one.
No, it's
that is Alex, so, yeah.
Don't move my icon. You wouldn't like me if you moved my icon.
So I think for me, that's been the only thing that's been, and it's not even like it's an aggravation. I'm just sad it's gone because it was cool. But that's really it. And I think the rest of it, especially now because I have the GM, the GM has been released.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's cute. They call it a Golden Master. Because it's not like it lives on any media anymore, so it's really entertaining to me. But I put it on my iPad. I have an iPad 3. I have an iPhone 4S. So I'm not running the latest and greatest, which is always, for me, sort of a test. Is like, what's it like if it's not on the new hotness? You know, when you get the new OS, like, of course it's going to run great on the current hotness, but, like, if you have the old hotness, then how's it going to work? And so on my 4S, it's solid. On my iPad, it's solid. And so far, I really like it. And I like the sort of lighting and blur effects on things. So, like, when you have a picture for a contact and you make a call, it sort of goes blurry behind it, and there's, like, the sort of sample of the color out of the picture behind it. And
yeah, it's translucent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really neato. And so just some of the stuff like that is very, very pleasant. And once you get over the whole, this isn't how my phone looked yesterday, it's pretty nice. And it's really hard to let go of that because it's, I mean, let's be honest, Apple really didn't need to innovate, and so everybody was mad when they didn't, and then everybody was mad when they did.
Yeah.
But if you give it a chance, it's very nice if you can sort of let go of, like, because you still basically do know how to do everything. This is the thing, is people act like they've given every default icon a new name, and they've given everything an icon that doesn't make sense, and so now, you know, phone is actually orange and called Qbert, and, you know, that's, like, it's not like that at all.
That's a shame.
Some of the icons are, Qbert would be awesome, wouldn't it?
It would, wouldn't it?
I don't even know where that came from. Maybe I need more coffee. So, you know, it's because I was talking video games with a friend of mine yesterday, I think. So, When you look at stuff, it's still familiar, but it is different. So if you can let go of everything being the way that it was, but still pretty familiar, I mean, you can still do everything you need to do. Like, there wasn't really, for me, the learning curve was what happened to my .com button. Do I have to turn that on someplace? Mm-hmm. That was really it. And once you sort of get used to things being slightly different, I think it's really a good experience overall. But I'm worried because my mom got an iPhone 5 yesterday. And so I'm worried.
She's in for a shock.
No, she knew. They told her at the store. They told her at the store, and she didn't want the color one, and she doesn't want an S. So, so she did actually want the 5. It was $99, and so she went for it. And so I gave her class yesterday, and I'm worried about her only because she's gonna have it just long enough to have figured everything out, and then I'm gonna go, give me your phone. I have to plug it in my computer, and it's all gonna look different. Yeah. So
the new drop down of where you can actually get to things like your Bluetooth and your Wi-Fi. I mean, it's taken them 10 years too long. I don't know how long the iPhone's been out, but however long that's been out, it should have been there from day one.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how long I've beat that drum?
Oh.
Seriously. 7 taps. I counted it. It was 7 taps to get into Bluetooth, change it, and get back out again. Yeah. 7. So
we've got real first world problems, haven't we?
It's really... It's frustrating because one of the people who worked on TiVo was somebody who came from Apple, and one of the laws that they dictated on the TiVo UI was if it takes you 2 hits to get to something, then that's too far. You have to find a better way to do it. And so, like, knowing that there are people out there who are trying to make the experience better, to know that I have this beautiful slab of technology from Apple and that it takes 7 taps to make it so my headset works. Mm-hmm. That's just dumb. So I used to jailbreak for that because SB settings was a little thing where you went pew, and then it would all slide down and you could customize what went in there. So I had Wi-Fi and airport and 3G and or Wi-Fi airplane mode, 3G, the flashlight. And there were a couple of other things that you could do in there.
Basically, they've just gone and looked at what you had. They've looked at what you had and said, we better build that.
Well, maybe, because I used to jailbreak.
Don't make Kelly angry. You wouldn't like it when she
says. I used to jailbreak for 2 reasons. And the first reason was because I liked having folders. And the second reason was because I liked having the SB settings swipe, tap, swipe to get, you know, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi on or off. And, so they gave me folders in iOS 4, 3 or 4, and then now they've given me this Command Center thing, and I think as Command Center evolves, it's going to be gorgeous. I'm going to be really excited when I can put an app in there.
It's just an absolute no-brainer. In the phone, you know, when you do your favorites in the phone, you know, I never ring anyone out of contacts. I always press favorites, and the only 20 people I know are in there, and Carl's 7 of them. I've always wondered why they just didn't do a favourites for any button you pressed on there. You press it and it is just a favourites folder on or icon on your home screen. And you just put in a desk. It's just, what do they call it on a Mac? An alias. An alias goes into that folder and that's the end of it. It's called an alias on the Mac.
Okay. On a Mac.
Windows. Okay. Okay.
It's an alias.
Now,
because we're old school.
Andy, as the developer, so are there any interesting APIs in there that you're looking forward to playing with?
The one I'm most looking forward to doing, which I absolutely need to use in about 2 weeks' time, is SpriteKit. SpriteKit is just awesome for letting you do animation-y type stuff, moving things around on screen, which before was a pain to do. You have to use third-party APIs, frameworks.
So how much easier have they made it then?
A million times easier. It's so much easier. Anyone could do it, kind of thing. It's kind of taken all the fun out of doing stuff. It makes someone like me, who's not a games or a graphics programmer, able to do gamesy, graphicsy things.
Oh, the world is over as we know it.
So does that mean we're expecting
balls everywhere?
A game from you, Andy, at some point in the future?
It's not a game, although there is a game in the pipeline.
Yeah, you're meant to be getting on with that. They told me the other day. And he never gets back to me. He's meant to be writing this game for me, and he never gets back. Did you remember the Commodore 128? They had a sprite editor built in. Maybe they've just gone back all that way and taken it.
Wow. Now, also, we're going to get, with every new purchase of an iPhone or iPad, I think, iWork for free. So it looks like they're taking the like Google Docs and stuff seriously, a challenge from Google, and that puts a lot of pressure,
Microsoft,
because Microsoft
give
not
away,
free.
Well, they give Office away with Surface, so.
Well, that's true.
I don't know if it's with the Pro or not, but yeah.
But they give yeah.
But then
so
you're
they
stuck
give
with a Surface.
I quite like my Surface.
Really?
Yeah, I'm
not trying
RC
to overstate this.
I
don't want to be like a snark. I know this is an Apple show, but like you are literally the first person who has used one who has told me that they like it.
It's
the first.
The main problem they've done with the Surface is what Apple didn't do with the iPads. That Apple made a separate OS with a separate UI specifically for the tablet, and that's exactly what Microsoft have tried to avoid doing. You've got the previously named Metro UI, mm-hmm. and on the RT, that's 95% of the stuff you do, except if you do Office, or Internet Explorer if you use the desktop version, because there's two versions. But when you're using the Surface RT, or even a Pro in the RT apps, it's as if you're using the iPadness of an iPad versus OS X.
Okay.
But when you go to use normal Windows apps under Pro, or even the ones that you can use, the MS ones, the Office stuff on the RT, then it all falls apart. And everyone's saying that you can use the full desktop, you can use the full apps. You can't. The targets, opening a menu, pulling down a drop down, selecting an item, they're tiny little targets that aren't the right size for your finger. And it's the... Okay. They try and tout it as the full desktop on a tablet, and it mm-hmm. just so is not that. If you take it as a tablet OS, which is what the RT stuff is, then that makes a lot more sense.
Okay. Because you actually are the first person I've known people who've tried and basically said, like, I failed, and I'm a reasonably technical person. I'm a developer.
They failed in how they implemented it as well, in some degrees. Like, when I set it up first, you turn it on, and it's the familiar Windows install process. You know, the questions it asks you, where are you, all that sort of stuff. And there were three tiny boxes, and not in the middle of the screen. It's like, hang on, there's this big screen, and you've got standard-sized boxes as if this was on an actual computer. It's like, what the hell are you doing? That's not how you do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say the standard Windows experience about an hour remaining for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, no, it is that. No, you get the full Windows install experience, including all the horrible bits.
Oh,
but it's like, that is completely broken. Some of the other stuff's completely broken. But when you get to the iPad-like apps that are designed mm-hmm. for the input mechanism, designed for the screen, they work beautifully. The inbuilt mail app is lovely. It has some flaws. They're technical, and they're only going to hit advanced users, but
mm-hmm.
When you're using it like you would an iPad, if you tried to run OS X on an iPad, you'd find all these things you didn't like about it, because it's mm-hmm. just wrong, and that's what they've done. It's on,
okay.
You know, the Pro is heavy, it's really heavy, compared to the RT. It's like, you know, you imagine if your iPad was double the thickness and weight that it is, you wouldn't be liking
it
as much.
You're not selling it, Andy.
No wonder it needs a kickstand.
The RT is brilliant, the Pro is horrible.
Yes.
It's like, what? Everyone's looked at the wrong one. It's like, no, the good one's over there. That is the good one. Just don't try and use or want to use desktop apps. That whole restriction that you can't is the feature that is good.
Well, as I say, Apple are going to make iWork free for all new purchases, and as well as their online effort that they're doing, where you can go into Pages and what are the other two? Numbers and Keynote. And you can
Keynote.
Make... Because that's what I did with the competition thing. I just done it in Numbers on the screen. It was just worked out fine. You just export it as a PDF, and it worked wonderfully. But these are really good apps. And as they said in the Keynote, they're always in the top 10, these apps. And the fact that just by buying a new device, which most people are going to do eventually, they're going to get access to these really creative productivity apps. And I remember when the iPad and stuff came out, I said, this is not a productivity device, it's a consumer device. Well, now I see lots of people being productive on iDevices. And with this new technology coming into the newer phones, and probably the new iPads making them faster and more, you know, graphically intensive, I just see taking off big time. And I'm really looking forward to it.
They're great apps. I use Keynote on my iPad all the time. I virtually... don't bother using Keynote on my laptop anymore. I'm almost certainly going to present it from my iPad, and they need to fix a couple of little things that between the desktop version and the tablet version, i.e. fonts and things, because if you bring in something in from Xside, you don't have everything available. It's a cut-down version. But yeah, they're great apps. I bought most of them already. But,
yeah, that's annoying
thing. When they released that, I'd sort of ground my teeth a bit, thinking, right, thanks a lot.
But they're doing the same thing they do with iLife. iLife, you don't get free. They're not free apps. You get them free when you get a new Mac.
Does that mean they're going to stop giving you free updates then of these when they come up?
No, sure they'll give you. Well, that update mechanism they did was. Why couldn't they have an update mechanism? I don't understand. As a developer, I don't understand why I can't say, this is, main version, go from 1 to 2, the first point, and have, in the App Store, you know what people have got, what they've paid for, you don't have to do any of that work. It's easy to say, if you're going from this version to this version, you can pay this much, or if you're a brand new user, you pay this much. It's so easy to do. You can write the code for that in half an hour. It's not hard. But they just have gone a strange route where you've got to produce a new app each time, and I don't know how well that works.
It has to be re-approved and then all the rest of it. Yeah, it's not
clever. Means you get paid again, though.
As a developer, does that mean I get paid again?
Basically, I remember we talked about this when Logic came out, and the fact is, if you do a rebranded app and you've developed it enough to make it look substantially different from the previous one, there's no reason why you shouldn't get paid again for all that hard work.
The trick is, with that, that makes you... with the upgrade model, you can choose a price for the new one for a new user and a price for an upgraded user, you have to have the same price for everybody on the new version. So it's fine for Apple with the pockets they've got. They don't care about the upgrade money so much. I might care on some of my apps whether I get paid full price or not. And I can't charge as much if I've already got this and I'm treating it as an upgrade. I'm going to lose people. It should tiny little bit more control would benefit a lot of developers.
I get a feeling Kelly wants to say something.
This only happens in software.
Yes.
I drive a Mazda. My Mazda is a 2000 Mazda. There is no point where I can roll my Mazda down to the dealership and say, I really like the new Mazda. Give me it for free. I like the 2013 version. No, only sort of. And it's never for the same amount that it was paid. So I'm not going to get the purchase price for my car when I take it in. Now, I don't have the best example because my car is now 13 years old, but... like, my husband has a 2012 Subaru Outback. So, if he takes it in tomorrow and says, but I really like the 2013, you should give it to me for nothing, they're going to laugh him out of the Subaru dealership. And that's the difference. Like, you don't get that in any other anything. You can't take your Mac into the Apple store and say, I bought this last year, give me this year's for free. They will point and laugh at you. There's like no other model where this is what happens. So on the one hand, it's totally understandable, but it's something that software pricing has set up for itself. It's sort of unique. The thing that I find frustrating is that people don't want to pay, period. It's not, I don't want to pay for new software. A lot of regular folks will pay for something new. Like, I really like this developer. Andy makes great things. Andy's new version was a ton of work. It looks totally different. It runs so much better. It's going to scream on my new iPhone. I'm totally going to pay Andy another $5 for this. And you know why? Because I'll pay the same $5 that Starbucks for some foofy nonsense with whipped cream on top and not even think twice. And that's the thing that irks me, is that since everybody put things out for free or for a dollar on the App Store, people feel like they're entitled to something free or a dollar and don't want to pay for something new. So even in the old software model, you still had to pay something for a new version to go from 2 to 3, to go from 5 to 10, 9 to 10, whatever. You still had to pay a little something. And people have gotten used to not having to pay, even when the first digit is what changes. And I just find that really, really frustrating. Because my day job is supporting somebody who is doing this. And it's really, really really, really horrible. And the reason that it's horrible is because they will give you a 1-star review. I can't believe you want me to pay again, you money-grubbing so-and-sos. That's one of my favorites. So you get 1-star. I downloaded the app. I bought the app. But you made me pay for it, so screw you. No. You get 1-star reviews that you can't respond to on the App Store. There's no mechanism. There's no mechanism for voting them down as the person who listed, as the developer who listed the app. You can't downvote things that are tech support requests or review, you know, a bad review that has nothing to do with the application. You know, I jailbroke my 3GS and your app doesn't work 1-star.
Yeah, I've seen them, actually. Yes.
Yeah. So
I'll stop doing it.
Thank you, Alex. So it's frustrating, but and I see both sides of it, but I find the entitlement attitude of a lot of people in the App Store, and you know why? It's because that phone is not cheap. I paid $200 for a phone to hook to my $1,200 or $1,500 or $2,000 computer, and you're charging me 99 cents. It's evil!
Terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really, that's, I think, the reason that it chaps me the most.
What did you say, Andy? I can't even work out what you said to...
upgrades and things.
Be quiet. Next time, be quiet.
That's why I think the upgrade mechanism does work. It's like, it's the equivalent of trading in your old Mazda for the new Mazda. Giving you a bit of a break because you give me something that I can... Well, in the software, I can't sell it to someone else, but I know you bought it, so I'll give you... there's no physical thing involved, so I don't lose anything by doing that, and I can differentiate you as a new user from someone who's already supporting me.
Yeah, but the difference is, and I will completely support Kelly in this, where with Kelly's Mazda, she's got the opportunity to go and sell it to someone else. Whereas, I can't have an iOS app on here, I don't know, Andy's bat and ball
there isn't
game.
A reason
I can't go and sell that to my
though.
Friend and then there, take that 50 pence well, and put it together.
In something like the App Store ecosystem, that it would be possible, in theory, for Kelly's app, you know, to broker it to Alex and transfer ownership. I mean, you know, maybe there'd be some sort of fee in there as well, but it's not something you couldn't do in software. It's perfectly doable. It's just that's not what available. People choose to do. Because you've never bought the app. You've never bought any of the software that you've got on your machines. You've only got a license to use it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, as we just round up, so what do we think? Are we going to buy the new phones? Are we going to get a 5S, a 5C? I'm going to personally get a 5S. I'm going to sell my old 5 and get a 5S because I want the new gold. I want the fingerprint.
I don't know why you don't have both.
You're getting the gold one.
Yes, unless you can talk me out of it in a space of a week or so.
What people don't know is if he undoes that shirt anymore, he's got this great big gold.
I'm not doing that because Kelly will say something again.
Well, hey. I've got some sort of lanyard you could attach it to and just hang it
Stop
off your
it.
Neck.
Stop it. Stop it.
All I said was I was distracted by the man cleavage. Good lord.
I think that's a compliment.
I'm quite annoyed, though, that I can't pre-order my 5S today. Only 5Cs are available.
I don't understand that. Why does it
matter?
A lot
of people theorising because they want to see queues around the Apple stores come Friday or Thursday.
Will you be
night.
Queuing up or will you be ordering
God,
online
no.
or what you're doing?
I would never queue up. No matter how much I want one, I still couldn't bring myself to queue up outside the shop.
I've queued up loads of times.
Unbelievably lazy. Yeah, but that's only for McDonald's.
No, because the pubs are open in the evening.
And they have inline service. Like while I'm queuing for in the Apple Store, I can just get me a McDonald's delivered to me. That'd save me a lot of time.
Well, okay. So who's getting one of the new phones? Either one.
Not at the moment because it's,
not yet.
I've got to admit, this is the first time I've almost felt excited enough to think about it in a long time.
Wow.
There's one reason. There's nothing in there that makes me think, I have to upgrade. There's a technical reason where I might need to, because you need to test on 64-bit hardware. And that's the only way you can do it. The stuff you can run in the simulator is similar to what it's been in the past, that not all the features of the phone are simulated in the simulator, so you can't necessarily do it. So you have to test on 64-bit hardware to make sure it all works. Mm-hmm. That's the only case I would have to get one.
And you're sticking to that?
Yeah,
for now. I mean,
Kelly, will you be queuing up?
Probably because I don't think there's a way to get a 5S any other way.
Well, I'm going to order it next Friday. So
order it to do what?
Order it to arrive.
That's what you want to do. Is press Siri on your 5, and then order a 5S via Siri. Can I just make a quick, because I did make sort of a little bit of a summary of something that I felt was quite different about this keynote, and I know you're summarising it just quickly. The tone of this keynote, one of the things I used to really get annoyed about was, it was normally Scott Forstall that did it, but it was this grandiose, we are the best, and then they used to name other people and belittle, and it was really very, it left a really bad taste in my mouth, and I've complained about that for ages. But this keynote, and I did watch it actually quite carefully, the tone of it was so much, if you like, I don't want to be disingenuous to anyone, but he was so much more British, and I don't know if it's a Johnny Ive sort of thing, but I counted one reference, and it was a small, and it wasn't a nasty joke, it was just a silly Android quip by Phil Schiller, and it was quite pleasant, it was nice, it made me smile, but there was none of this, we are the greatest, we're the best. They said, look, we've done this, and we actually think it's quite good, you might like it. It was really toned down, and I tell you what, when I finished, I even watched Elvis Costello, because I was in a nice mood by the end of that.
I did not watch
normally, that. At the end of keynotes, I'm like, oh, you know what, you've done something really good, but you've just managed to annoy me somehow, because it's all the big I am, and they've walked away from it, and I was so pleased to see it. They weren't bad-mouthing anyone else. They were like, you know, other people, you know, they did mention that other people do similar things. When they said the camera, we think this is a really nice idea, you might like it. They didn't spend any time bad-mouthing anyone else. And I then thought, you know, maybe it's a Johnny Ive effect, because he's a very calming, his outward persona is a lot more subdued than a lot, shall we say. And then I thought, well, hold on a minute. They're trying to play to a new market. Yeah, they're trying to play to an oriental market where a respect thing is a big thing in business, you know. And I don't know how they do business, but I dare say it's not quite so brash and in your face. It's probably a lot more subdued. It's more, let's show you what we've got. We think this is really nice. I hope you enjoy it. And it's more calming and it's more surreal. And I just found the whole thing so much more pleasurable to watch this time round.
You know what else, though, is that it wasn't the Tim show. Tim is the CEO, and Tim was not the bulk of the presentation. No, he was almost like an MC.
Badly,
like,
quite a few times.
He walked out and said some things, and then the people that were in charge of those things were the people that actually talked about it. Yeah. So they still won't let Johnny out of his little room, which I was very sad about. But,
I don't think he wants to. I think he's happy where he is.
Yeah, maybe. I like to think that he wants out and they just leave him locked up. But like, you know, he came out in two separate videos. They had him talking about things. They had Federighi come out and talk about...
he's very good.
His he to-do really list with the shampoo and conditioner, which I thought was very funny. like, they had, like, some little moments, like you were saying, some little moments of humor. But also, I think this is another piece of Apple as a company evolving. They still do the event. It's still a big deal. Everybody on Earth wants to know what they're up to, where it's going to, what's going to happen, what's coming out. And I think... This is Tim sort of pulling back the curtain. Well, you were talking about Asian culture, so he's opening the kimono a bit to show, like, these are the people that are actually responsible. Like, give them the credit. You know, it's not, you know, everybody always thought Apple was Steve Jobs, and there was a very straight line there, and I don't know that that's necessarily true. It wasn't true then. He was just sort of the poster boy. And I really like that Tim sort of steps back and lets these guys come out and go, this is what we worked on, we think it's great, and you're right about the tone, and it's not, this is so awesome, we are now going to bestow it upon you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's less that, and it's more, and I think this, a big piece of this comes from more presentation by Phil Schiller and by Federighi and Johnny and everybody, is their enthusiasm for it. Yeah. And it, you know, this is really awesome, and I really want to show it to you because I think it's great.
But there was
and
no
not
smugness.
Because it is that the greatest, was, yeah, but because we think it's great.
There was no smugness, and that was always the thing that really... I mean, even if they reinvented the wheel and it was better than it ever been before they would have found a way to annoy me with their tone. You know, they just, I would have gone, look, you might have done that, and that's brilliant, but do you really have to tell me how bad someone else's wheel is? Just tell me how good yours is, right? Don't tell me that it's going to change the world, because it just won't, but... tell me how good it is. Do it with you know, do it in a nice, pleasant way that I can see what you're trying to show me. Let me see that you're delighted about what you've got to offer and leave me with it. Don't badmouth anyone else, because that always left me with a bad taste. Mm-hmm. There was the one Android joke which was funny and it wasn't condescending. It was just like, haha, Android something or other. And then they got on with their presentation. And like I say, it left me feeling quite nice, whereas normally they left me thinking, why did Scott Forstall have to make that look into the camera? Why did that person have to mention someone else's device? You're there to sell what you've got. Not, it's not a political rally. You're not there to badmouth anyone else. You're there to tell me what you've achieved. And I really enjoyed it more than I have probably any keynote in the last 3 or 4 years.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that's a thing that I noticed in Samsung commercials lately, and like the Microsoft Surface ad, to talk about the Surface some more on the Mac show, is that they full-on call out Apple in their ads. And I always wonder why, if you're advertising for yourself, why are you calling out, you know, someone else who is your competition? Why would you even say the word iPhone in a Samsung commercial? Sure. And I never understood that, because I sort of thought, perhaps this is just foolishness on my part, I always thought that you put out an advertisement to tell people how great you are and not to talk about anybody else. Because when you talk about the iPad, now all I'm thinking about is the iPad and not the thing that you're trying to sell me.
Well, I'm not interested in someone else's fire. I'm interested in the phone they've made.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. That's it.
So we're, on the whole, we're looking forward to these new phones. Not so much maybe the C for our slot gathered here today, but definitely the 5S. I mean, I think we're looking at it as a positive phone. It might not be the outlandish upgrade that we're expecting, because that'll hopefully come next year when it's the 2-year cycle and they change the form factor and all the big changes. But the change
the
they put in,
track.
Yeah, the changes they put in this time does make that phone even more powerful and more attractive than before. Changing the colors up, not a big deal, but I think the fingerprint scanner, the additions they've done to the camera, the fact that they future-proofed it with 64-bit and that massive processor in there, the M7 chip, which we didn't really discuss, which can monitor all your movements and stuff without even using hardly any battery power, and then report all that information back to the various apps and the main chip, and all the apps, all the health and fitness things that you can get from that. All those Fitbits are virtually out of business. Not really.
Well, no,
but
I think that M7 means give it 6 months, there's a watch coming.
Maybe so. I mean, yes, so you could have these things go through. I think, and the battery life is also meant to have been improved over the previous version. I think this phone, although the price tag is a bit more expensive than last time, I think is a very positive, the 5S. Not so much the 5C, but that's not my market. That's not being aimed at me. But 5S...
There's not enough of a price difference with the 5C. $100.
No, there is that, yes. But because all they've done is basically take the 5, take off the metal back, put the plastic back, and there you go.
But they've made it funky.
But they have made it funky.
$100, it's a lot better. I mean, and contract phones, if you're aiming cheap phones at people on contracts, that's not necessarily a big deal, because it doesn't make a huge difference. Getting the people who are not buying contract phones at a price they can afford, that's what that phone needs to address.
But younger people, or people, you know, people who don't have the $100, again, like, if all you have is $100 to spend on a phone, another $100 is going to be hard to swing. And a lot of people are going to go, I just want a phone. I need it to get my email, and I don't want this Samsung thing, so I'm going to get the iPhone instead.
Just to make a point, how much did your mum pay for the 5S?
Oh, $99.
There you go. There's your difference. You get a free phone.
Anyway, so...
Well, you're getting the 4S on a free, aren't you, at the moment? So.
Yeah, the 4S will be the freebie phone.
Yeah. And once these phones get into the Apple stores, and we can all go and touch them and feel them and pick them up and hold them in our hand and see how fast they react with the new iOS 7 on there, I think Apple... are going to be okay for a while, at
least.
They'll
be around this time next year.
Yes, I think they will be. And we can go through all of this again, and we can...
We can go through this again in about a month's time.
Exactly, we've still got the iPad launches to come. So that's...
I think we know what chip it might be getting, though.
Yes,
exactly.
How awesome is that going to be? Seriously.
Does the M on the chip stand for McCain? That's what I want to know.
McCain?
Is it going to run that hot that you get oven chips?
Now, if you want to make your 5C or your 5S look even better, then there's why not stick it on top of a 12 South high-rise stand? Because these things look absolutely stunning.
Amazing.
All brushed aluminium. You've just thread your cable up through the insides, up to the top, and your phone or mini iPad mini just sits on the top and looks marvellous. Fortunately, you don't have to buy one of these because we've got one. We've got one for you to win. If you want to enter our 12 South High-Rise competition, simply send an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com with the subject line 12 South Competition and just answer this simple question. In what year was 12 South established? Get your entries in, and next week Ewan's going to pick out a winner. Now, only use the email, by the way. Don't tweet him or send any other form of communication because he will only accept the emails.
And he will probably swear at you.
Yes.
Oh, he will.
Yes. Right. Well, this show and every other show on the network will not be able to exist without UK2.net. They really do keep all the shows going throughout this network. And if you'd like to help this network, then please head over to our website at britishtechnetwork.com, click the UK2.net banner, and explore some of their wonderful services, web hosting, dedicated servers, domain names, and VPN, and many other services they have available at great prices. However, if you want prices that are even better, then head back to our site, click on the sponsors link, and take advantage of all of the various codes that we have there for you to get discounts on. You can rack up, you can save quite a pretty penny there. Without the support of UK2.net, we couldn't continue to bring you all the shows on this very network. UK2.net, support them because they support us.
Or blame them, whichever way you like to think.
Blame them, yes. So cool thing is, let's just quickly run through the cool thing is. Kelly?
I picked the other South Majigger. They have the Ghost Stand, and it's a clear stand that sits at sort of an X to hold up your computer. And it holds it up at a nice angle, and this is not for a computer to type on. It's like if you're somebody who sets things up sometimes like I do, where I want my laptop screen to be up nearer where my second monitor is, and I plug my second monitor into my laptop, and I'm using an external keyboard, then this is absolutely a stand. It's not a super portable stand, so if you're looking for something to fold up and tuck in your bag, this isn't it. But it's 12 South, and it's beautiful, and it's $35 US. It's very, very nice, so if you're not looking for one of those slab of aluminum stands, the other nice thing about this one is that, like I said, it's the X across the bottom. It's got silicone on the top so that your computer doesn't slip off, and it gives a lot of air circulation underneath, so when you're spending a lot of time listening to Don McAllister tell you how to make all your screencasts awesome with his ScreenFlow magazine, then when you're actually doing stuff in ScreenFlow and sometimes your fans kick on, this gives you an opportunity to have a lot of air circulating underneath. And it's a beautiful stand, and I can't wait for mine to show up. I picked it even though I don't have one because it's 12 South and I love them, and whatever they make is awesome. I actually have the Compass stand on my desk right now, which is also beautiful and super compact and can be a defense weapon in absolute necessity because it's solid metal and it's built really well. So
don't mess with the Kelly. Andy, what you got for us?
I've got a stump. That's what I've got. It's a stand. It's a lovely little rubbery weighted stand.
I saw those at Macworld. Also a defense mechanism.
You can lob it at people because it's fairly hefty. It's coated in a rubbery material. You can stand your whatever because it's device agnostic. Doesn't matter what
device you actually agnostic.
Put. Yes, I
used that term the other day. I'll have you know.
Whatever you like in it. It doesn't have to be iOS or
it be
Android
have to be
or your Kindle. And it fits on a slope, so it doesn't. It's just a cool little thing. In my travel bag, and it's $25, £20 here. Stumpstore.com, or they're on Amazon as well. And it comes in a range of colours, and it's just a nice little stand.
Could you get one to match your new iPhone 5C?
You could, yeah. They come in various colours.
There you go.
Good, good, good.
I feel like I've let everyone down there because I haven't got a stand of any type.
We'll find out. Alex, what have you got for us?
Very quickly, Snap Hill have upgraded themselves to Snap Hill Pro. It's what is it? It's not iOS at all, is it? It's a Mac piece of software. It's just for removing artifacts. Well, that's what the old one was for, removing artifacts out of photos. Now, you know, I use Photoshop, blah, 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 whatever number we're at now, and you can do all that sort of fancy stuff. But, you know, if you don't want to spend kajillion pounds on Photoshop and you don't need it, this is a really, really good alternative. It will remove artifacts, but with the new Pro version, it's got a lot more in it now. It's got you know, you can change hues and saturations. What I do like about it, you've got a lovely masking tool, so if there's a part of the image that you want to change, but you can change the exposure, you can change more or less everything you can change in Photoshop, but because it's got a masking facility, just draw over the bit you either want to remove or you want to lighten or you want to change the colour or you want to do anything with, and it's all built in. It's a standalone app, and what else I like about it, it also comes, when you install it, you have the option of installing plugins which come with it as well. So if you're already using Aperture or Photoshop or whatever, but if you're using Aperture being as it's Apple and you got the $49 or whatever it was a year ago when they dropped it down from stupid amounts to normal amount, you can use the plugin and you get the plugin for free I mean, there's about five or six different plugins that come with it. And, you know, you can do it from Aperture. And, you know, let's face it, Aperture is a lovely place to store images and maybe make them a little bit brighter, but that's about all Aperture is really good for. This adds an awful lot of functionality. The upgrade is, I've only got it in dollars, and I only paid for it in euros, so I've no idea what it is in pounds, but in dollars, the upgrade's $19.99, and the standalone does, you know, if you've never bought it before, is $39.99. And so many of the bundles that we've all bought over the years have had Snap Hill in it. Have a look, because you might own it and not even know you own it. So have a look and have a look at the upgrade. And it really is a really, really clever bit of software for, what's that, £30? I don't know what that is, really. But for $40, if you've never owned it, it's really going
to...
Oh, I don't know, but it's going to really upgrade. If you use Aperture, it's going to really upgrade it into something far more substantial than it is now, so I heartily recommend it.
Good, good. Excellent. My pick is from our wonderful very own Don McAllister, and it's this month's edition of his Screencast Online magazine, because in it, he goes pretty in-depth on the whole Plex server software. So he teaches you how to set up the basic server, how to get your digital media ready to be put into Plex, how to use Plex iOS services, how to get the Apple TV, both I think regularly and just the hacked version on the Apple TV 3.
Oh my gosh.
Also in this edition, he goes into setting up email security or using GPG. So, you know, secure emails. Pretty important at this point in time with all the various news stories going on. And it's a really good magazine. I think the price is... if you just want to jump in, I haven't got the price. $2.99 I thought it was, but I could be wrong about that. I could have sworn I put the price on there earlier.
I'd pay far more than that for it.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. It really is a wonderful... It's $4 a month. There you go. Whatever that is in pounds, I'm not sure.
I think it is two. I can't remember.
But no, I mean, really, if you want to get into the Plex, if you want to see why Plex is so good and so many people use it, except Will Green... Just go and check out this Don's tutorials, because he goes through it really simply, and I have been using Plex for years, and even I discovered a few things in there I wasn't aware of. So he does a really good job at finding the details. So there you go. Maccast Online magazine. Fantastic.
Sounds good.
Let's round up.
So good Don bought the company.
So good, yes. So let's round up. Where can we get everyone? Alex, where can we get hold of you, sir?
Alex G. Fox on Twitter would be most lovely of you.
Good, good. Andy?
Best place for me is Twitter. I'm at Longball.
And also the Elmug person, aren't you?
Elmug, London Mac User Group, of course, should say that. Elmug.org.uk.
I just thought so.
L-M-U-G, that is.
I was thinking, he's named Longball and he's got a stump. I don't want to go any further.
And Kelly, where can we hold on you?
How do I follow that? You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso, and you can also find me on the Tuwa Talkcasts, recorded live on Sunday evenings, and on Angry Mac Bastards. And you can also find me on The Comic Show elsewhere on this very network.
Now, I saw Andy tweet out earlier, or put in the chat room, that mm-hmm. it's coming back this Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So, good. We can all look forward to that.
Yes,
enjoy
very
the comic. Also, he was on earlier on today, Mr. Dom McAllister himself, at Dom McAllister on Twitter, or at screencastonline.com, if you want to go and follow him. My name's Carl Madden. I'm on Twitter at Clausio101, or on the Google Plus communities, where you probably are maybe watching this right now. Also on my own where am I? Also on the Big Show and the Media Show, and on the Here and There Show, the show I do with Missy, where we get very, very silly indeed. Well, that's our iPhone 5 S&C show, so hopefully you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you found it informative. I guess we'll be doing it all again next year, or next month if the iPads come out. Until then, stay safe. Bye.